Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? We like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins along with Chris Novembrino. Chris, it is officially summer. Have you made your summer playlist yet?
I have not made my summer playlist, but we have arrived at the point of the summer where Texas is over 100 degrees and I am the man with two air conditioning units.
Are king in your place.
I am. You know, they say in the land of the blind, the man with one eye is king. In the apartment complex with the underperforming air conditioning unit, the man who took the time to buy a window unit years ago just to have in hand just in case. The same thing with the space heater. Not too expensive of an investment, people. Worth having when it's really hot. Right now, temperatures inside the palace, the cat palace, reasonable, very reasonable. Without the window unit, it wasn't happening. It was not happening. But I'm chill. But it is toasty, Hawkins. And even when I go outside, even if it's cool inside, it doesn't matter. Like, you step outside and you get into that 100-degree weather, and within about 3 minutes, you're like, oh no, this is bad. This is unpleasant.
I solved an 8-year problem with my quote unquote new air conditioner that was driving me nuts because
Found love?
No, I'm never gonna figure that one out. Oh, no, okay. It was leaking into my onto my floorboards and warping up and things like that. And I was like, well, what the hell's going on? Where's this leak? Can you find this leak? And the people who installed it couldn't do it. And it was driving me nuts. So I sat there and I watched, and the internet solved this problem for me on Reddit, of all things. I was like, thank you very much. Turns out they needed to put a drip pan underneath where my refrigerant lines were because they were condensing because of the hotness of the valley and the air and the cold pipes. So I had a choice to either insulate those pipes or get a drip pan. So I went down to the local hardware store, insulated the pipes all by myself, and now I have no more dripping. I have no more gray spots in my ceiling tiles from the dripping. I have no more complaints from the unit downstairs about it condensing and flooding their place. I am happy and I feel like a man. So I'm
Look at us. We are resourceful, functional, yes. Viable males, yes. Hawkins. Yes.
What are we doing watching wrestling, which is a kid?
I don't know. That's kind of dragging me down right now.
Oh, it's interesting. We will do a preview of the Forbidden Door. Quick plug, I'll be on the Fightful post show. So all the hot takes of that show will be through me. Person not terribly looking forward to the show, but we'll go through a preview and I'll tell you why in a bit. But first, the news. Sad news, after post time yesterday came out that WWE longtime referee Tim White passed away. For those who of a certain age, they might remember he owned the bar where JBL and Farouk would always go and trash it every time they were in town. I forgot what town it was, but they'd go in and Vince McMahon would literally pay for it to get remodeled after trashing the dumb thing. Also, one of the most tasteless sketches ever on WWE television, where Tim White committed suicide of all things. But lots of love from the community, from the wrestlers. The wrestlers absolutely adored the guy from what I read. I don't know if you can have Tim White memories per se, because, you know, it's one of those things where referees were never really put up there, except for this thing about the bar that JBL and Farouk would go in there. And of course, the committing suicide thing, Chris. But if you have any, because he is more of your generation of fandom.
Please. Yeah, for sure. I definitely, when you say Tim White, I immediately knew who he was. I was trying to think of matches that I could recall him in. And, you know, it's like I can't recall any key, like, Tim White spots in a match or anything like that. But, I mean, you don't necessarily need to be always paying attention to the guy in stripes.
If you last that long in that company, you're doing something right.
Exactly.
And Little Nate has been there forever, which floors me at times, because at the beginning of Shake Them Ropes, I was told by somebody who knew, oh, they're phasing him out. Years later, still there.
So, I mean, that's what I can really say about Tim White is that, like, yeah, he had a nice run and he was a solid referee. And
still mad about the suicide thing. I think that is the most I will go on record and say that is the most tasteless thing I think they've ever done. Although I've been going through a lot of those this week because of the whole Vince McMahon thing. I came upon one from the old ECW. I forgot, where he looks at Sabu and goes, "Look, a member of the Taliban." I just went, "Oh my God, I can't believe he said that out loud."
I mean, a lot like the Stacey Keibler bits and those sorts of Mr. McMahon bits.
The creepy sexual stuff is bad.
Especially given what we now know about him, because it feels like it's speaking to a pathology.
Speaking of which, great transition, Mr. Novembrino.
I do what I can.
Reading from the Wrestling Observer, Stephanie McMahon being put in power was said to be based on the decision of a special committee, which would be the 8 members of the board of directors that were not Nick Khan, Vince McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, or Paul Levesque. It was Vince McMahon's decision to leave, but the board's decision, not Vince's, of who to put in her place. It should be noted that of the side of the company that buried her on the way out, none of that came from the members of the special committee, but from others in the company. I don't know what to
believe.
The
plot thickens here.
See, if you take it at face value, I'm not so sure. I really am not. I think it's one of those things where it's like for plausible deniability, they're saying that the other 8 members, not that Dave is lying, but I think somebody may have worked Dave. Don't get me wrong. But it's one of those things where if it's true, though, very intriguing.
Yes. It is. Well, no, because it's like, it's not clear who's on whose side. And who's playing who here. And especially with Stephanie, like the psychology of Stephanie during all of this still remains a bit of a sphinx to me.
I tell you something. She is the most fascinating member of the McMahon family to me, because I hated her when she was in charge of creative, from all the stories that I heard from people who worked there and all the things where it was, but it was a lot of Vince service and about, you can't sneeze in front of him and, you know, dressing people down and crap like that, stories I heard. But I know writers now absolutely adore working with her. So it's one of those things when they've had to. So it's one of those things where I want to know who the real Stephanie McMahon is at times. That'll be interesting to go. Breaking news from last week, after we went as well, is that John Laurinaitis had been put on administrative leave. Let's both take our victory lap on that one, Chris. And that Bruce Pritchard had been named new head of talent relations. Pritchard being put in that position would seem most to indicate that Vince McMahon is still calling the shots. McMahon's still running television while Laurinaitis is out. And it's a double standard, but there will always be a double standard for the top people, and nobody is more a top person than McMahon, as that's Dave writing. The key is that Laurinaitis was not replaced, nor was somebody new elevated into the position. Yes, Vince's inner counsel gonna be Vince's inner counsel, and God knows Bruce Pritchard just always seems to land on his feet.
It's amazing. Maybe there's like a loophole where McMahon can't add anyone new, but he can move people around still.
He wants his allies still in place.
I think
he knows that there's a flank coming. He just doesn't know from who or what. I don't know. I'm still of the impression that when Vince McMahon dies, his head's going to be put in a robot. or his brain's going to be put in a robot and he's going to just book this company forever. I see
Hawkins. Now I'm starting to think that Mecha McMahon comes back and has a tremendous heel run, but he doesn't own the company anymore. they do hire him back as talent though.
Well, my joke is that there's a DC Comics character named the Brain, and it's a brain in a robot thing, but his protector and lover is a homosexual gorilla by the name of Monster Mama. So I'm just assuming he's going to hire this talking French ape who they're going to eventually fall in love with one another.
That's a hot angle.
That's a hot angle. That's a hot angle.
Love cross appeal. People like sci-fi.
We'll do it for great. Pride Month.
Yeah. Launch it in June.
Even of more interest, on June 22nd, earlier this week, Paul Levesque had a meeting with talent and officials in Orlando, Florida. He said he was back, but didn't explain what he meant. Multiple people at the meeting known him using the words, quote unquote, "I'm back." But he never made clear if he was back in charge of NXT or just back at work, which he's been at for some time, but hadn't been back to Orlando. He did indicate that there would be some things changing, but could not go into detail on them just yet. Chris, are we getting NXT 2.5 or 1.5? Are we going to have some mixture of the black and gold and the Technicolor vomit?
It would be a step in the right direction if Hunter was back in the helm of NXT booking. That would be great. It would feel like a show that actually has some direction rather than whatever the hell this thing has been. I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, what's interesting, I guess, is if Stephanie is empowered here, perhaps that does mean that Levesque is going to be empowered as well.
Yeah. I don't think those are on opposite ends of the spectrum there.
Right. It logically follows that Levesque would see a rise in power.
Mm-hmm. Following up on the story last week about the settlement between Oliver Luck and Vince McMahon, meeting just ending after 9 minutes, turns out they've reached an out-of-court settlement on June 16th on Luck's $24.1 million lawsuit. All suits and countersuits dismissed with prejudice. Vince McMahon, much like the end of Rounders, looked at Luck and said, "Pay this man his money." Because the rumor is that the discovery would just be too much, and then that would go into other things that, and he already has enough bad PR, so he just paid off this thing to get rid of it.
It does not make sense to fight a war on too many fronts, and it looks like McMahon has maybe
lost. Sun Tzu, damn it.
No, he is totally an Art of War guy, right?
Oh,
you
know. Dude, he has a first edition of Art of War. Like, if
tried to get it autographed by the author.
He probably has one that's, or he says it's autographed by the author. That's
I have one of the originals. It's actually autographed by Sun Tzu himself.
To Vince. All the best. Love, Sonny.
Mr. Zoo.
Mr. Zoo. Z-O-O. And Vince just trying to work people.
Written in Sharpie.
They had Sharpies back then? Oh, no, it looks a lot like a calligraphy.
It's Chinese ink.
It's come out that Dewey Foley, his last day with the company was the day after WrestleMania. He was mostly on the NXT side. He just basically, very nice note saying, "Hey, if you liked something on NXT in the past few years, I probably had a hand in it in some way, and I really appreciate the opportunity." So, I don't know anything about that or why he left or whatever. I know he wants to go into real television writing, so I guess maybe it was just time to move on.
Yeah, I mean, and I think right now it's hard to, if you have vision for writing sort of like bigger, longer storylines, even in wrestling, it's hard to sort of envision doing that in WWE right now.
It gets nothing on a resume out here from what I've been told. It's like if you have it on there, you hide it from there on your resume, because it's like you did that? Because like, you know, it's quote unquote real TV versus not real TV kind of a thing. There's a weird back in the
there's
early,
like a, there's a slapdash quality of the production that I'm with you. Like that,
it,
you,
well,
you
it
imagine...
might be different now. It might be different. This is, I'm talking. This was early to mid aughts for the most part, where I had a lot of people who kind of went through the grinder there that I knew. And it was just one of those things where it's like, yeah, we got out and we hit it because agents and everybody else says, no, the studios won't take you seriously with that and all this, and agencies won't take you seriously if you say, hey, been writing this, because it's non-union. It's also one of those things. So.
Oh, sure, sure. Okay, interesting.
Interesting enough, follow-up from Pro Wrestling Noah on Muta. They have announced four of the last five matches of Muta, who is retiring in the spring. He will wrestle Kaito Kiyomiya on... I butchered that. I apologize. On July 16th at Budokan Hall, he seriously better lose this match. Although I'm not holding my breath on it either. He'll also wrestle on September 25th at Dolphins Arena in Nagoya. October 30th for a show at the new Ariake Arena. And January 22nd, 2023 at the Yokohama Arena. Yokohama show will be his final show as the Great Muta. He will then do a retirement show. And that for a show that has not yet been announced in the spring. So I was wrong when I told you this before the show. Only one opponent named so far, but it looks like these are all going to be Japanese shows as opposed to him possibly doing a stateside show for one of those final five.
Oh, wow. I mean, look, all right. Unlike Dave, I don't think it really matters if Muta wins or loses here. He can win all five of his final matches, and I think that's fine.
Well,
it's
no,
Muta.
Well, the story there is that Kiyomiya is the young hot up and comer.
Right? No, I get that. I get that. I know who Kiyomiya is, at least sort of loosely. Yeah. No, but I'm just saying, like, it just doesn't really matter. The one time I guess it matters when they had that like belt thing with Muta, and he wasn't like on a retirement angle or whatever. He just like won the belt.
Well, Dave's also one of those guys who's like, your last match, you should be looking up the lights type of thing. I think at times, I don't know. I can't speak for Dave, but yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I get it, but like at the same time, it's Muta. It's kind of amazing that he's been able to make this last little run here over the last 10 years, considering he's like on bionic knees. Like we were talking about like Mecha McMahon. Muta is like, he's like a transitional figure into being like Mecha Muta at this point. It's kind of amazing that he's gotten, you know, been able to do as much as he's been able to do, even if it hasn't been like at the level you and I understand him and know him to be at.
Speaking of retirements, the July 31st Ric Flair retirement match at StarCast, which sold out the Nashville Fairgrounds immediately, is being moved to the larger 9,700-seat Municipal Auditorium. Flair is doing media right now, and Chris, I'm a little worried. Gonna be honest, he has a pacemaker. He says, "I can just plug that back in," type of a thing. I was just like, I'm
that made you, what a rascal that Ric Flair is, huh?
Yeah,
rapscallion.
I mean, if you're on social media, you've seen videos of him and Jay Lethal training in a garage as well. He's gonna try and do the Ric Flair match. This is not a give a round of applause because he's in the ring and he does a couple of things. He wants to give you a Ric Flair match on the way out. And I don't know, man. If I pay for this and he passes away in the ring, I'm not going to be
it's
happy.
Like, it's like you bought a snuff film then, right? Yes, like, I said, like that's the issue. I think you can't buy this unless you can quietly tell yourself you're sort of okay watching a snuff film. Cause like there's definitely a non-zero possibility with this in a way that you would not expect at a normal wrestling show.
Interesting news from AEW. They've clarified this, and I wasn't aware of this either, but the Blood and Guts match on Wednesday in Detroit will be 6-on-6 with Jericho Garcia, Matt Menard, Angelo Parker, Jake Hager, and Sammy Guevara versus John Moxley, Eddie Kingston, Santana Ortiz, Wheeler Yuta, and whoever Bryan Danielson's mystery guy is on Sunday. It was always going to be 6-on-6 with Yuta added, and the decision to put Guevara with JAS was to give them the sixth person. Okay. Make it longer, make it bigger. I'm kind of down with that. I'm fine with it.
I'm fine. I think so. With all the, I do have problems with a lot of things that AEW is doing right now, but the one thing that I think they have found a pretty good format for are these big multi-man absolute chaotic event things. I like them. I enjoy them. I mean, you can't do an entire show of nothing but them, but like, I think that AEW is clearly, as a company, is clearly quite good at doing these multi-man things at this point.
I was going to read this thing about AEW trying to get nominated or at least putting themselves up for consideration.
Are we doing predictions on who the secret?
We will when we do the preview.
But okay.
Yeah, no. Dave writes, AEW is attempting to get nominated this year, in parentheses, it won't happen, for an Emmy Award for Dynamite on the Outstanding Structured Reality Program category. In the past, WWE has attempted to get nominated for Emmy Awards for Raw, but was never successful. Certainly wouldn't be for editing. They did not attempt to do so this year.
Yeah, no. They would not be able to pull it off for anything. Certainly no.
We'll go on a little bit to the ratings numbers. We haven't done that in a while because the ratings this week, fascinating in some ways. SmackDown, 2,389,000 viewers, 18 to 49.62, up 7%. Rampage, 369,000. 18 to 49.12. Raw, 1,986,000. In the demo, 0.54, its highest since April. Vince was on Raw, which is amazing in some ways. Does he appear on SmackDown tonight, Chris?
I think he is finding this weird little "you gotta love me" thing, and it definitely seems like he's getting a rush off of the, you know, "I brought you John Cena. I put smiles on people's faces. I love all of you. You love all of me. Let's all sing 'No Chance in Hell.'"
Yes, bow to me, people, while I'm on trial or getting investigated.
And unfortunately, there is, I know to your and I chagrin, a much larger contingent of people than we would like that
aren't plugged in.
Yeah, they don't know, and they're weirdly down for this. I'm with you. It's not even malice, like where they're like, "Yeah, sexual harassment. Yeah, cover it up." No. I do think it's literally they don't know. They see McMahon, and they're just cheering, and like they're being like hapless dupes, sort of getting played into the chorus of the "See, they love me," it's just gross.
They don't follow the dirt sheets or anything. We just want to watch wrestling and you know, all our people. And that
I just want to bring my family to the show.
That will come into play a little bit later when I talk about AEW. Not a direct apples to apples types of things, but just a little bit. Miz and Mrs., the debut, 587,000 viewers. That's not a bad number for that kind of a show. The most viewed YouTube videos, again, and this Vince McMahon was in the top three. Lashley Theory, number one. Number two, the Elias Ezekiel segments.
That's at least correct.
Which we'll get into in the Lazy River, I think, because this is gonna be one of those mea culpas where I have to throw myself at the mercy of people, because I was dead wrong on that. NXT, 637,000 viewers, 0.18. NXT's highest in the demo since October 2021's Halloween Havoc episode, but only the highest in total viewership since 2 weeks ago. Dynamite, 878,000, 18 to 49.31, up against the Stanley Cup game, but I got news for you. I think some people are turning off this thing because of the New Japan angle. And let's start there in our kind of a Lazy River discussion, because
for sure.
I think I said this last week. I think when it comes to, say, AAA in Mexico, when it comes to New Japan in Japan, and when it comes to American wrestling companies, there's a certain, for lack of a better term, I don't want to call it jingoism, but nationalism when it comes to these companies. It's I want to watch the style that I like. It's not that I don't respect these guys. And let's face it, the New Japan build, it's been 3 weeks. It's been kind of slapshod. We'll get into that when we get into the preview and stuff like that. But it's one of those things where I'm just like, WCW used to try this all the time, and it just it became piss breaks for people for the most part. No matter how good the Japanese people were, unless it was Muda or Liger,
yeah,
nobody gave a damn about
it. Nope. They I mean, even Chono, they had a hard time getting people to give a damn about.
Yeah, like Hakushi eventually got over. In WWF.
Yeah, but as we talked about on that episode on the Patreon, like a lot of that had to do with Bret Hart really seeing the potential in Hakushi and like going like, no, I want to work with this guy and actually wanting to do more than they were even able to do. Like,
yeah, because that was just another evil foreigner gimmick for WWF. You know, they had Akio Sato with him, you know, because he wasn't going to wrestle. But yeah, it was just another bland... evil racist type of crap.
But if Hakushi hadn't been liked by both Undertaker and Hart, he would have gone in a very similar trajectory. And even with those two fans of his work, it wasn't enough. It is. There's like a long history of having these be a tough sell.
Do we want to start or end with the Forbidden Door preview?
You brought up Dynamite, and okay. I think that that's a fine place for us to start with.
Okay, because there are other things in Dynamite we can talk about if you'd like first.
For sure, and then we can get into the preview here too.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool.
Like I just feel, as a top line, I just feel like this show over, really since the pay-per-view, has been adrift. The injuries and that sort of thing have put certain things up in the air. But I think the MJF saga has been pretty badly mishandled, especially now that we're several weeks into it. And like, it's like not clear what's going on here. And I don't think it's helping the title out at all. I think there's just like a lot of like structural problems here, not unfixable structural problems, but like, they've drifted into a bad direction here, and a lot of that it is with, in my opinion, not thoughtful writing. So where I want to start with is this Christian Cage promo.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah. The article I'm reading says this was one of the best AEW promos all year and probably the defining Christian moment since coming to the company, and that includes his pay-per-view main event. Christian is completely reinvigorated as a heel. I will grant that Christian as a heel will be good in this angle, but the writing of this stunk. And like, I thought that this came off pretty lukewarm right from the beginning. You have Christian coming out and really trying to get the crowd to boo him out of the building.
I'll wait until you shut up.
My God, it was more like cringy than watching when the Miz tries to get it going and he can't get it going. Christian was trying so hard to finally get there. And then we get into the stock Gen X-ery, you millennials sort of like dialogue of like, you people get on your Reddits and you get on your Twitters and you...
He threw in the each and every one of you from the WWE heel turn 101.
Yep.
As well.
And he also referred to it as social media, like sort of avoiding naming specific things for like silly reasons. And like, then we finally get into the why Christian, why part of this. And I thought the why Christian, why part, like when he was like, this is all about the battle royal a year ago. I'm like, really? That's what you guys settled in on? Not that like you've been watching this kid for weeks, like, always like when he listens to your advice, like, you know, hit him with the steel chair or whatever, he wins, and then when he doesn't, he like starts coming up short. Like, that's not it. Like, this had to be this weird long con where you became his best friend and his mentor for a while and like legitimately cared about him. Like, what would have happened if he had listened to you by this like whole logic of like the long con involving getting tossed out in the battle royal? Oh, by the way, he was also mad at you people in the fans for being thrilled that Jungle Boy eliminated Christian, and that he's been hanging on for this for a while here. And then we got into, oh, by the way, your father's a piece of crap and you're lucky that he's dead, because like just like this very
Eddie's in hell.
Eddie's in Hell. Yeah, I was also reminded of, there was that one, but you know what came to my mind maybe a little bit more recent was, I Wish You Had Died in the Womb.
Oh, God. Oh, the Bellas.
The Bellas.
I was thinking, yes. I was also thinking of the one with Natty and at right after her dad died.
Yeah. No, there are people who apparently, as I said, the summary I'm reading here on F4W sort of like is like, this is the best promo all year of the company. God, I hope not. I don't think that's true. I would have to like go through like what MJF was like 2 weeks ago. Like, what is this? I don't know where this is coming from. But yeah, for me, yeah, this was bad. This was bad sort of like blow by blow, layer by layer. He couldn't get sufficient heat. He ended up like really begging for heat and then finally got like, oh, all right, he's not going to move on until we boo him. All right, let's boo him. let's move him on here. And then like the stuff he went to was just weak. It lacked fire for me. And yeah, as you said, you know, your father's in hell. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't that. Your father's dead, but
right. No, I know. I'm saying like that sort of stuff. It felt very unearned beyond everything else. It just felt like Christian's just sort of like pushing buttons. And then we left out one last thing: the Luchasaurus beat at the end of all of this. So, I will grant that it's a good idea to turn Luchasaurus heel.
I think
that there's tremendous utility in making him heel. I think it'll offer him a chance to sort of rework his moves. It leans into what he's good at. It gets away from some of the stuff he's not good at. It'll slow him down a little bit. It'll get him away from some of the flashier moves that I don't think necessarily work for a guy his size and let him lean into stuff that's more his speed. And Christian and Luchasaurus will make a good tag team. Fine with all of that. Why isn't Luchasaurus kicking his ass? Makes no sense. The rift between Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy has not been earned. That Luchasaurus would be not absolutely bullshit that he couldn't get into the ring to save Jungle Boy from getting attacked mercilessly by Cage, but he's still mad enough that he'll run out to the ring to confront Christian Cage, who's been ducking him all week.
I will fix the promo for you in a moment in terms of that part of it, because
I don't know that I have anything else. So by all means, the stage is yours, sir.
Okay. What I liked about it, because I was a person, I went, well, it started off poor, it started to get good, and then it went bad. And then I realized the parts I liked, I didn't like as much as I thought I did when I went back and watched it again. A little story for those of you who don't know, a little Hollywood trivia. Back in the when Pixar was getting up and running, they hired Patton Oswalt to come in and be a script doctor for them. And what he would do, his only job was to go through the scripts that they did. He did this with Ratatouille and I think a couple other movies, is he would go in and he would take out every single cultural reference that might become outdated with time. That was his only job. And to figure out a way to kind of reword it or rework it or something like that so that these movies would be timeless. I want somebody in AEW, because this is kind of the opposite problem of what WWE has. WWE overscripts their guys. I just want an acting teacher or an improviser or someone who's written wrestling and or written television and knows, all right, I know, Christian, I trust you to do your beats. And I trust you that you know what you're doing. But let's go through what you're going to say in this promo. And then take out things that possibly break the fourth wall and instead put them into kayfabe terms. Because I don't mind the little insidery terms that are being hinted at. Because, again, I've gone over this before. You know, the Horsemen would do things like this, but they'd couch it in the world. Like they basically say the Road Warriors can't go in the ring. But they do it within the realm of, oh, you're just in there lifting weights. We're doing the wrestling stuff. And man, once those muscles, you can't get the oxygen into them, you're going to be tired after 15 minutes with your tongues dragging out. It's basically saying that the Road Warriors can't work. That's basically what they're doing. But they didn't say that. And when Christian says, I'm not here to put anybody over, I'm not here to put over the young talent. Just do it in the way, I'm not here to get beat by young guys.
Literally, that's, all he had to say is, I'm here to make money.
Like, I'm here to make money was great.
Yeah, that part, part was fine. But like, he actually, like when you're saying just the Patton Oswalt thing, he just needed to edit out the break the fourth wall, put guys over thing.
Yes.
That's all that needed
I'm
to be removed
there. I'm
here
to make money and I'm here to win.
And I'll make money at anyone's expense.
Yes, exactly. That's all he had to do. And that's what bothered me about the promo. The Luchasaurus thing, I thought was going to be more interesting than they made it, because they did the wink nudge thing to the audience, which just, I just went, eh. I really wanted a little bit more intrigue to this. I wanted Christian to take a powder and just yell at Luchasaurus, hey, I got no problem with you. My problem's with Jungle Boy. You've done a great job and you never lost any of those matches. That was all Jungle Boy. And put that seed in there.
Yes, right. Like, I feel like they need to earn the turn with Luchasaurus, where there's just like, it's this slow burn thing where, like,
you know what they're doing though, Chris? I'll tell you what they're doing. They're doing that he's really a dinosaur and he has a brain the size of a walnut. Oh. I think that's what they're going for.
Oh, dope. No short term. He has no memory.
Easily swayed.
Oh, Jeff, what if he doesn't remember being tag team champions?
He's not a goldfish. He's a dinosaur.
Yeah, okay, so then give it a few more weeks then.
Okay. That's what I want. I want Memento starring Luchasaurus, where he has to put nuts all over it.
Flowers for Luchasaurus.
Flowers
where he's
for Luchasaurus, yes.
Slowly losing his memory.
Wait, I have a master's degree? I was on Celebrity Big Brother? He gets up every morning and he just reads the post-it notes on his refrigerator.
You were tag team champions.
Oh, now I want
Christian is slowly misleading him by changing the post-it notes.
Yes, there we go. He's literal gaslighting. There
yeah.
Yeah, but the whole...
Do not believe his lies.
I mean, the whispering thing about Marco Stunt no longer with the company, which reminds people he's no longer with the company. Are they going to bring Marco Stunt in to be a heel with
right.
Luchasaurus?
Right, and it doesn't really explain, or it didn't add to the Jungle Boy storyline. That to your point, there were more fourth wall breaks than I maybe was even giving credit for in my triage. And to a one, none of them really did anything or made things spicier. And I mean, I'm not a big fan of fourth wall breaks, but if you're going to do it, they can at least sometimes be justified by being spicy.
Yeah, I agree. And the death thing, look, I know that I saw on social media that there was a clip of Luke Perry on the Edge and Christian Awesome show, and I'm sure he got permission to do all that stuff. The funniest part of that promo, and this is another logic leap, is I got on social media, I started doing research on Jungle Boy. So the guy doesn't know how to Google enough to find out that his girlfriend's Anna Jay, and maybe use that again. The only thing he found out about Jungle Boy is that Luke Perry was his father.
No, I love this. He has a year-long, months-deep revenge plot, Hawkins. And during this time, he doesn't get on and do any research about his target here. It just festers in his brain for a year. I hate this guy. I'm going to do it. I hate him. He's bad. I don't like him. I'm going to get him. And that's as deep as it goes.
Yeah, and Christian's better than that, because he's an awesome heel. He's an awesome
heel. And there's a good, simple story. Like, you do not need to be J. Michael Straczynski here, waiting, you know, working this through seasons and layers and like little seeds planted on all these different beats, and one thing feeds into the other, like this textured thing. Like, this is a fairly simple story. We outlined what it's supposed to look like last week, or like a one iteration of it, but like, you two at home can construct a simple version of this. And it does not require 1 year of festering hatred. It only requires 3 or 4 months of Christian being frustrated that despite Jack's middling performance, Jack doesn't seem to always listen to his direction. And like, you know, like he, Christian's trying to be this mentor to this kid who is annoying him because Jack has visions and ideas of his own here about how he wants to be in a tag team. And he finally gets fed up with watching Jack Perry not listen to his advice. And that for Christian, he can't really fully transition to being a manager and accepting that like part of being a manager is that the people you're managing don't always do exactly what you would do in your brain if you were out there on the court at that exact time. Like there's a real basic story here. And instead we have like this complicated, but not interesting, long story.
Yeah, it's in season 3, episode 14. You had Christian clearly say I'm checking to see because we've just passed 8 Eastern, whether or not Vince McMahon comes out for Smack.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dad, I can't find it because it's like
That Raw promo, right? Where he just comes out and lists off the number of the show, and it's just like 1519 or something, like just like this random number. It felt
oh, the best joke. I can't take credit for this, and I wish I knew that the Twitter user, because I'd love to give that person a shout out. But that Vince should come out every week and do shorter and shorter promos. And like this week, he should come out and go 30% off WWE shop if you use the code Vince. Just leave until it's just hi, and then he just drops the mic.
He just says the number. He comes out every week and he's like 1531. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Moving over to WWE for a little bit before we go into the preview. Let's get this all out of our system, shall we? My mea culpa, Elias and Ezekiel worked and it's really good. And Kevin Owens is making it really good, but also Ezekiel and Elias are really, really fantastic again. And they hit it on all cylinders with these vignettes this week. And my God,
they're like the only good thing about Raw.
Yes, they pretty much are. But yeah. It's like if they do introduce Elrod.
Yeah, I'm here for Elrod. I'm ready for Elrod.
For it. I am so here for it.
The faces of Ezekiel. Like I want him to have like a huge family.
I want this to be the Dudleys in 1994, 95, where it's like all these performers were dressing up as Dudleys. this is my half brother from Japan. This is and all of them start with the letter E.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yes. Right. 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 Yeah. No. The half brother from Japan could be like Etazawa.
I didn't see that one coming at all. Oh my God, that was so good. It's Etazawa.
Etazawa.
Etazawa? Are you here? No, it's Etazawa.
Yeah. It's unrepentantly stupid, but like, here's the thing. I think that there's definitely a place for this in wrestling. Like, I don't need every moment of the wrestling show to be a sports-like presentation with generally serious angles. I want my main event angle to have that kind of intensity.
Yeah, I like some stupidity in my
wrestling. Like, even my Intercontinental angle or my tag titles to be sort of with that, you know, same sport-like presentation. But, like, in the lower mid-card, no, this is great. And, like, this fills up things. I've really come to enjoy Kevin Owens saying what happens every time. The punchline is that every single time Owens is like, well, there's probably a camera trick. Like, he basically lists exactly what Ezekiel's doing, but he doesn't trust himself enough to actually believe it. And like that as stupid as it is, cracks me up every single time. Like, he talks himself out of exactly what happened each time. That, like, you know, that they, but then at the end of the day, he still knows the same person.
Yeah.
It's Roadrunner and Coyote. It's silly, but like, I love the performance too by Ezekiel / Elias in really making these two characters feel like different dudes.
Yes.
Yes.
He's like, very good at this. And I didn't think he would be. This.
No, like that, it's not. They exude different physical energy, and it's like one thing to just like change your costume, but a lot of times like people change their costume, but they still just like feel physically like themselves under the mask.
Posture too.
He changes everything. Yeah, dude. No, it's like a full body character shift. It's quite good. This I thought was done as well as anything on WWE TV, and as crazy as it seems. The Ezekiel Elias stuff has been some of the strongest stuff that WWE has done this year. And I would consider it to be fairly strong in pretty much any year. It's silly. It's unrepentantly stupid, but like it's working and it's being done well.
Yeah. It's your turn.
Okay.
Or I can give you another option. I'll just rapid fire my WWE notes so we can get rid of them.
Yeah. Let's finish out Raw here.
Okay. Well, I have Raw and SmackDown from last week.
Cool.
Okay.
Here's what I'll hit you with. That John Cena return graphic that WWE put out, where it's like, who would you most like to see John Cena go up against? And your options included, the mighty Gunther. Who looks fantastic.
You're Intercontinental Champion now, because I was going to bring that up. And he and Ricochet are fantastic, of course, because he hollows out Ricochet's chest, and it's great.
Sure. That's great. No, it's great. Or Ricochet, who has absolutely been protected like a stud. Would you like to see John Cena versus Ricochet? You haven't seen John Cena in a while. You want to see him go up against Ricochet? No? Okay, fine. Austin Theory? How about Omos? How about Veer? Like so many great options here. It's a real testament to the depth of WWE's roster that these are the people that they were able to come up with on the graphic.
I'm kind of here for Veer in an Umaga sort of way.
Oh, sure.
Cena and Umaga worked great together. But yeah, my problem with that is in that render, John Cena looks about 52 and he's still wearing the fluorescent greens. I mean, he looks like the old guy at the convention still dressing up as the superhero.
It's sad. It's unfortunate. And such like a underutilization of this guy who's so obviously like
he's a huge star now.
And we just talked about like Ezekiel Elias. And like you could totally see Cena changing and updating who John Cena is as a character. You're right. He's a star now. I think even kids would accept him as like suit and tie adult John Cena, who is a wrestling legend, and is coming out here and like having matches, and rather than him having to come out and wrestle in jorts and an oversized t-shirt, that it's like at this point Cena's clothing is out of step the same way Pee Wee Herman's clothing was out of step in the late 1980s. Like it's like a throwback look.
That was the bit for him.
right. I know. Right. Like it's not a bit with Cena. Right. Yeah. Like he feels like it's like this weird throwback. Like I'm like everyone's favorite child star. It's weird. It's like Steve from Blue's Clues still wearing the Steve outfit.
I cannot believe that. Number one, that they put almost in the Money in the Bank match. If they don't have Ricochet jump off of Moss onto the belt at some point during this match, I'll be disappointed. But after building up Riddle as a potential world title winner, unified title winner, to beat him like that, I can't believe they took that much goodwill and decided to give it to Omos.
I know. When Riddle, like, look, has the presentation, the characterization with Riddle been perfect? No, but like, dude, like the guy can clearly carry a longer form match than Omos. He's a good seller. He is. He's quite good at selling. And he's a good wrestler. He's interesting. Fans like him. He's a guy who can actually eat up time on television in a way that Omos simply cannot. Omos cannot give you a 20-minute match. You have to have bells and whistles, smoke and mirror around Omos. And that's okay. But I just it baffles me that you spend all this
Omos
time.
Has ever taken a bump that big off of a ladder or even been put on a ladder. So that's.
No, I just like I it. It's baffling to me. Yeah. You know, Riddle works. I mean, I hate these stupid pot jokes with him. Like they're just so like.
As a pot smoker, I'm angry at that.
Well, okay, like, I guess in the same way that, like, there's a way of, like, joking about liking beer that makes you stupid as you're holding and drinking a beer. Yeah, you know, like I can't quite
put my finger. You know, it's not just rednecks that drink beer.
Yeah, like, you're, like, saying this, and, like, you're sitting there drinking a beer, and then all of a sudden, like, look at the beer, like, ugh. Like, and you never feel like that normally. It's just, like, the joke from that guy, like, just sort of, like, makes you go, maybe I won't have the next one. Like Riddle kind of makes me feel that way, even as someone who, of course, enjoys a good smoke.
Becky and Asuka are great. Don't get me wrong. I love them. I wish they'd do something with Asuka's character here. Up a bit.
Right. Becky could benefit from this fresh cone of paint thing, too.
This is her fresh cone of paint. She's doing this neurotic thing, and I just can't stand it, to be honest with you, because she's so good. But let me ask you this. This is I'm using that as a transition, because those two are going to always be fantastic when they're together. Is Carmella Bianca for the title? Is this another swerve, much like SummerSlam last year, where somebody else comes out for Carmella to face Bianca?
Maybe Carmella gets like obliterated by a bigger heel or something like that?
No, I was thinking possibly Aunt Pam.
Okay. Bailey comes out
for Carmella to face Bianca.
Oh, okay. That could be interesting.
That was just something. I like Carmella. I think they should play into this SummerSlam thing a little bit. Like, you people, like, don't do the you people, but hey, you know what? I really didn't get my match because Becky knocked me out. I think they might be doing that. They may do that for the thing. I think that'd be kind of interesting. And I think Carmella's game. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that she doesn't deserve a women's title shot. It's just one of those things that I think would be interesting in continuity wise. And my other last quick hit for all my WWE notes of all it is, Tommaso Ciampa.
I'm so glad that's where I was going to go to.
If Hunter is quote unquote back, does he get rescued from this?
Save him. Let us memory hole this experience. Let us pretend this has not happened. That there's no reason for this thing called Ciampa to exist, and that we'll make him Tommaso Ciampa again, and we'll return him to a guy who is a complete three-dimensional character who is presented with integrity and as a legitimate formidable force, because this is god awful. It's crazy. Like, and you know, AJ Styles like would never like want to just work a 4-minute match with Tommaso Ciampa.
Yes, that would be such a great match. God, in NXT, that'd be a 4.5-5-star match.
Oh hell yeah! Oh yeah, absolutely yeah.
For a takeover, I mean. And putting him with Miz of all people, I just can't. That's all I have for WWE this week. Do you have anything?
No, unless we're doing like NXT.
No, but SmackDown, and I'm not watching it, but I was told for this Natty Ronda feud that they're doing, which the social media for this is cringe, Chris. It's absolutely just, it's going into Ronda's conspiracy stuff and Natty's plastic surgery stuff. And apparently there's going to be the plan was, and this is from Fightful Select, that there was going to be a Ronda impersonator with a baby care stroller that I think Natty was going to attack.
Oh,
exactly.
I would prefer a Ronda impersonator with a chalkboard connecting the dots on various conspiracy theories.
I think they don't want to be that cruel, but okay.
No, tell me about the space lasers, Daddy.
I don't think he goes there. Good Lord, that's a little too over the line. So I guess we will then end with Forbidden Door. And as we alluded to earlier, a snake bit show in some ways. Because it looks like every match on here has an injury of some sort where they've had a replacement. Mm. Don't quote me on that, but it looks that way. This is done before Rampage airs. There's apparently going to be a couple more matches added to the pre-show, the buy-in, whatever you call it. I assume those will be like multi-person schmozzes of some kind or something like that. I assume Toru Yano will be on this card in some way, which will make me happy.
That's good. No, I'm in favor of that.
The pre-show, Max Caster and the Gun Club, Austin Gunn, Billy Gunn, and Colton Gunn. Let me say this. I adore the relationship between Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed. I do. Scissor Me Daddy never fails to make me laugh.
Oh, yeah, I know.
versus the New Lions of New Japan, Dojo in L.A., Alex Coughlin, Kevin Knight, the DKC, and Yuya Uemura in an 8-man tag match. New Japan goes over and why, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
We saw these guys once on TV, and they never really built them back up.
It's goofy. And like, out of all these people, like, I think this is actually the justifiable that like Caster should lead his team to victory. But like, we should be slowly building to the Acclaim outgrowing the Ass Boys. Like, that should be the story.
I think New Japan wins this by pinning one of the Gun Club.
Yeah, I think so too. I think one of the guns loses. One of the guns loses the match, and that's how we get there. But like, you mentioned Toru Yano. I'm sorry, but like Max Caster versus Toru Yano would be a great heel versus.
I'm here for that.
That'd be so funny.
I'm here for him versus Danhausen. I'm here for him versus Orange Cassidy. I'm cool with this.
Yeah.
And Shota Umino, Wheeler Yuta, and Eddie Kingston versus the Jericho Appreciation Society, aka La Sex Gods of Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara, and Minoru Suzuki in a 6-man tag match. Dare we go into that closing segment now of Dynamite, which is that brawl that kind of was like all over the place, while Moxley and Tanahashi just awkwardly kind of stare at each other and don't build the stare down at all, because I think Tanahashi just kind of happy to be there right now. He's doing American Tanahashi in many ways, which is driving me a little bit nuts, but I get it. But yeah, any thoughts on that ending brawl on Wednesday?
The match,
Suzuki just kind of walks down and smiles.
like the whole match just felt like you just felt the disinterest the entire main event segment for me. Like all these guys are like, hey, it's the main event TV, but we got the show coming up this weekend, so like, let's just go through the motions. I was amazed they did vertical suplexes. I was legitimately impressed that they brought the level of work of vertical suplex to this match. This was so half-assed of a main event.
I mean, just Tanahashi is doing, I mean, look, I get people want to see this show because if they've never seen it, I'm a little spoiled in that I've gone to, hey, New Japan's here for WrestleMania weekend and they're doing the Rev Pro thing.
Got to do the Dallas show myself. Yeah.
And but this is what you got when you had the New Japan people in those shows, half speed stuff. And you're just like, it's not what I paid to see. And that's overall my issue with this entire Forbidden Door show is that, I'm taking the victory lap here just a little bit, that people had their expectations way too high for what they were going to be given for this show. Because they were thinking 3 or 4 superb one-on-one, 5-star Tokyo Dome type of show classics, and then to see a few other like multi-person matches that were very, very good. I'm not saying the show's not going to be good. Don't get me wrong.
Bug is not the problem with this show. It's the interest bug. Yeah.
Yeah, and also some of the matchmaking in this, right, as we'll get into, is just ridiculous.
I don't think some of the New Japan guys, especially like the old daddies of New Japan, I don't think that they like they're, as you said, American Tanahashi turning in half speed performances. And like, I think that if you've been watching the New Japan guys for a while now, like, you, this is the level of performance you come to expect from America. So I'm not surprised by that. The injury bug has made the situation worse, but like, I don't think independent of the injury bug, we would be getting 4-star matches all throughout this card.
Darby Allin, Hiromu Takahashi, Shingo Takagi, and Sting, aka the Dudes with Attitudes, part two. Although Johnny Ace isn't doing anything right now. Maybe you can bring him in.
I'll spare everyone my Johnny Ace impression.
Hey. I'll do my bad one. Versus the Young Bucks, Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson, and the quote-unquote Bullet Club, this time being El Fantasmo and Hikuleo in an eight-man tag match. Again, kind of shoddy introduction here. Hey, we're going to have Shingo Takagi and Hiromu Takahashi here. That's the thing, is Tony's relying on internet goodwill and people knowing who these guys are. You know what? You could have cut. Christian could have spoken next week about his turn. He could have taken the week to cool off because, hey, things are too hot here. Jungle Boy wants to kill him. And, hey, we could have had a video package with Hiromu Takahashi and Shingo Takagi to hard sell this pay-per-view.
That would have helped. I mean, because, yes, you basically have to book your own story in your head of why these guys are all hanging out.
Yeah. Like
why these guys are all having a match.
Now, this match, I think, is going to be pretty great.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
Especially with the Young Bucks and Hiromu and Shingo in this match. Who do you have winning?
I'm going to say Sting and Darby feel good sort of win thing.
I will agree. I think this is going to be a good guy type of thing. Do they join Los Ingobernables de Japón? Do we get Sting and Darby somehow being connected to Andrade and Rush? No, we don't. No. I'm sorry, Chris. I didn't mean to set you up there. I'm just doing rhetorical questions here in my head.
Yeah.
For the prestigious AEW All-Atlantic Championship. Pac versus Miro versus Clark Connors replacing Tomohiro Ishii, who was injured, versus Malakai Black in a four-way for the first holder of the AEW All-Atlantic Championship. I love Miro's Miro. Promo.
Miro's yeah, I hope promo Miro wins.
Was just pagans and
bastards and pagans. Pagans, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean... I love Miro. I love this new, like,
Redeemer character.
Yes, this Redeemer character. I'm at war with everything now, including God. Like, he's insane. It's great. I hope he wins the title. This title is not very prestigious, but I would
he
love
could
to
make
see
it that way. Belt him.
Yeah, belt him.
I want Miro. I think they give it to Pac.
Oh, okay.
To go and defend it in something like DDT.
See, I could just as easily see them doing this to get the House of Black started.
Oh, yeah. So you have House of Black?
Okay. Yeah, you know, I'm thinking I got to move my chip over to Black. I'm going to go with Black, but maybe I'm
from
wrong.
From the Netherlands, but representing the House of Black. And we end up having an American in the very first title match, which I think they wanted to avoid, but, you know, with Ishii out, you make do with the guy he beat in that tournament on Dominion. So, I really want Miro here, but I think Pac is giving it. So I'm going to go with Pac here. Intrigue, Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm for the AEW Women's World title. Been a little bit of a to-do about Thunder Rosa and Marina Shafir and that feud. Accusations of sandbagging going back and forth, etc., etc. Thunder Rosa and Marina appearing on social media, literally breaking bread and supposedly hashing it out. Chris, is there any shot they give this to Toni Storm? Because Toni Storm, I'm going to say they've rebuilt her pretty well, I think.
I think they have. I think the move here in a weird way, especially on screen, it's so weird, right? Like, kind of like sometimes relies on your off-screen knowledge and your being on Reddit knowledge to get the booking by. But then other times it's like pay no attention to the man behind the curtain with some of that stuff. So like, to me, if you were, you know, given the last match, we were supposed to pay attention to the man behind the curtain, so to speak. I would say, like, this is a great opportunity to turn Thunder Rosa heel during a title retention, but I could just as easily see them just cleanly having Thunder Rosa lose this still as a babyface to Toni Storm. I think Toni wins. I'm going to say Toni wins. I mean, especially with, like, some of the other to-do in the background or whatever. I think, like, I think the odds of Tony winning are much higher than I might have said even a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't know, because I know that I know Thunder Rosa is going to Japan for a run. And I think it'd be good for her to take the title with her to do that. But I don't want her to turn heel. We have way too many pretty good heels in the division, to be honest with you.
That is true. That is true.
And it's also kind of lazy. But I can see Toni Storm pulling one out and Thunder Rosa being upset, and we're kind of teasing it and we put it on the side for now. I'm going to go with Toni Storm winning as well. I think I'll join you on this.
Yeah.
On this underdog train. Will Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy for the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship. I still don't think they've done a great job with Ospreay here. I think he needed to cut some promos on Orange Cassidy. You know he can promo. I like Aussie Open, but I don't see the point of having them out there with Ospreay just to be the fall guys. I get it. But Aussie Open's going to be nowhere near this thing. Let's build the actual heat between Cassidy and Ospreay here. But I'm going to go with Ospreay. I think it'll be a better than you expect match. I think you're going to get the Orange Cassidy. He does the hands in the pocket, but then he gets his working boots on and it'll be pretty good.
Yeah. No, I think we already saw flashes of that in the tag match here on Wednesday, which was pretty good. But yeah, you know, like it's like, okay, what is Aussie Open here for other than to be like the, you know, thing one and thing two Goombas to be beaten up. I think that Orange Cassidy does not win the match. I don't think he's going to become IWGP US Heavyweight Champion, is it? No, I don't think we're sending Orange Cassidy international here. I'm with you though too. Like, they could have just done a better job building this up. I think like Cassidy's really been treading water since the Bleeding Orange. You know, Blood Orange was the peak intrigue for Orange Cassidy for me, and it's been kind of downhill ever since.
Yeah. FTR, Cash Wheeler and Dax Harwood, the best tag team in the world right now. Your ROH tag team champions versus United Empire of the great Ocon and Jeff Cobb, your IWGP tag team champions, versus Roppongi Vice, Rocky Romero and Trent Barretta, who are not tag team champions. In a three-way tag match, winner take all for both titles.
I think FTR's doing it. I think FTR's getting the belts.
I do not.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. And this is because of wrestling politics more than anything. FTR are currently the AAA tag team champions as well.
Oh, yeah. Right. And the CMLL, AAA, New Japan.
Yes.
Politics thing. Oh,
so
yeah,
I think the political thing here to do.
Roppongi?
I think Roppongi is getting okay. Both of these. Because
right, they're the only one that politically can sort of do that, yes. Like crossing streams thing. Got
yes,
it.
And I think and
Got
I think it. Romero and I mean, Romero's a trainer in the LA Dojo. Romero and Trent can go over there and do
right.
Tag titles and drop them. Or, I mean, look, I could see a scenario where United Empire takes both these titles and goes on their merry way here. Because Ring of Honor really doesn't mean anything just yet. They haven't built up a show of any kind. I mean, they've done... You know, they did that final battle, but I don't think they have anything. I mean, they don't have a week-to-week show just yet. So it's just going to be for super shows. I think it's not going to be FTR, but I don't think FTR is going to take the loss either. So I'm going to go with Roppongi Vice, probably pinning Great Ocon here.
Okay.
Yet in another version of slapshot booking and poor time management, Zack Sabre Jr., who did not cut a promo at all. He just came out and he went, oh, that's Zack Sabre Jr. What? Why?
Great stuff.
Versus a mystery opponent chosen by Bryan Danielson. I have a list of 5 people that this could be, Chris.
I got exactly one.
I want to hear your choice then.
Toothless Timmy.
Oh, you think Tim Thatcher?
Yep.
We need
a great technical wrestler who fits in with Blackpool Combat Club and can turn around. And when I was trying to do the mental casting in my head, I was like, who better than Toothless Timmy?
Well, then I will take my wildest calling the dumbest shot to the internet type of shot here, because I was considering And I don't mind the Tim Thatcher thing. I think people will be disappointed in it in some ways, but that makes sense. Yours makes sense. So I'm happy with it. Look, we've heard the people that everybody thinks it might be. They think it might be Samoa Joe. They think it might be Jonathan Gresham, which is a possibility. I'm not the biggest Gresham fan in the world, but I know a lot of people are. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think they'll put on a very good match if it's Jonathan Gresham. Claudio Castagnoli, a.k.a. Cesaro. A lot of people were thinking that. I still think there's too many politics in AEW. And
That would be strong. That would be strong.
Tony didn't want to sign him when he was renegotiating with WWE. And also there's heat there between him and Eddie Kingston. So I don't know if Colt Cabana is kind of coexisting, even though you don't see Colt Cabana anywhere in AEW anymore. On that route, one of the names I thought was possibly Chris Hero coming in, because that was a good one. One that wasn't on my list that I liked was Shibata.
That'd be fun.
To come in and do that and Blood and Guts, because remember, the guys are doing Blood and Guts. But I think, and here's where people are going to think I'm insane, and that's fine. Let's do this insanity thing. I think Bryan Danielson's promo was more cheeky than anything. I think it was a little bit wink, wink, nudge, nudge from the tone. I think there's a person who can do a technical match with Zack Sabre Jr. without taking a lot of damage, and also do Blood and Guts, a walk and brawl, without having to take a lot of bumps necessarily.
Hook.
That man is William Regal. And he is a member of the Blackpool Combat Club.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people would go ape for it. I think people would love this. I just don't know what kind of physical shape Regal's in.
Especially to do a match on a fly like that. You know, like, it's pretty short notice.
Yeah, but I mean, as a guy just doing like a groundwork type of thing and with Zack Sabre's kind of style, I mean, Zack Sabre's style isn't that hard hitting, really, when you think about it. But right. That to me would be an interesting choice, is if they could get Regal to do it. I'm not saying he is. I'm not saying I've heard anything, because I haven't. I'm just saying, more or less, it would be an interesting choice for me. I think it's going to be an actual wrestler. I think I love your idea. I just don't know if that's a oh my God type of signing that would excite people. But I like it a lot, and I actually like it a little bit more than Gresham. But Gresham's a get for Ring of Honor, especially if they're deciding to go through with it all the way. So we'll see. I mean, it's fun to guess, and I hope I'm not spoiled beforehand. That's the thing for me. Next match, four-way for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Jay White, the champion, taking on Kazuchika Okada, who also debuted on the go-home show, versus Adam Cole versus Adam Page in a four-way match for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Again, storytelling. Jay White comes out, says Okada's not on the card, and he won't be defending against Cole or Page. And now he's defending against all three of them.
You said this, and I was like, wait, was that the story on Wednesday?
The story on Wednesday. The story on Wednesday was a match, but the entire build when White and Page and White and Cole were originally Cole? When Cole was plugging it up as, oh, I'm gonna fight him or whatever. He said, no, I'm not fighting you. I'm not fighting you.
Yeah, right. No, and he made it sort of clear that, like, the reason he wouldn't fight Cole is because Cole was a loser.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so it's just weird that, like, at the end of all of this, now he's fighting Cole. And, like, I when we're pointing to, like, storytelling inconsistencies, you're like, how storytelling could be better? Like, clearly it could be better if this made any sense.
Yes, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
It makes no, and therefore it's not intriguing, because you sort of then go, well, there's probably nothing that's going to move around here.
And here's the other part that just drives me nuts. The dream match here was Page versus Okada. People were dying for Page versus Okada. Give us Page versus Okada. And instead we're getting no disrespect to Jay White and Adam Cole. Adam Cole's injured. That's why this is a four-way. I think New Japan gives way too much credit for Jay White as an IWGP champion in the States because they want a Gaijin to kind of hold the title over here and build up this territory, which they're still trying to run. They're still trying to run New Japan in America with a tour and things like that. But I think most people just look at him as a guy who's on the mid card in Impact for the most part. So
yeah, he just doesn't, he doesn't have that world beater vibe. The promo doesn't, there's like a certain aura thing that he, White yes. just doesn't have for me.
Yes, I agree. 100%. Who do you have winning this?
Who's the champion?
Jay White.
White. White. Well, I think White retains.
I see. It's weird. And I'm going to just tell me if I'm insane for thinking this. I'm thinking there might be a quid pro quo with AEW New Japan, where they put one of their titles on the other for a short term. I could see Adam Page winning this match for a short run over in New Japan. And I could see Hiroshi Tanahashi winning the main event for the interim title and then having to face Punk eventually. Am I nuts for thinking that?
Not nuts, but I don't, I mean, especially given how what AEW seems to be prioritizing in terms of like booking or whatever. Like, I don't think that's a great move for Paige. I don't think that really does anything for Paige. And I don't know that really does. Tanahashi Punk is sort of intriguing, but like, I mean, the interim
MJF
champion
Tanahashi, even
interim champion Tanahashi. I just don't, interim champion Tanahashi feels really gimmicky.
Yeah. And I just don't think he can carry an American
no
company because he can't nope. promo in English and he, nope. you know, he has his movements and that's about it. But yeah, judging from the go home on Wednesday, I would not do this, but that said, I'm going to go. Jay White retains. I'll say Jay White retains as well. And then finally the main event, John Moxley versus Hiroshi Tanahashi for the interim AEW world title. We've kind of already hinted at it again. I think
this has all felt like a long road to get to John Moxley being interim champion.
Yeah. And see, it's interesting because I think he should be interim champion. I think he's
the
champion.
One thing that gives you pause, but like you then there's only two outcomes to this match, right? Like it's yes. like a fixed system. It's either Moxley wins the title or Tanahashi wins the title.
Well, I think you and I, as people who talk wrestling and kind of go, you know, into the weeds on this thing, I think we're thinking next step. I think we're thinking, okay, once we put the interim title on this person, then what do we do about the unification? What do we do about the
week to week television?
Yeah. And instead of just concentrating on this match, which I think Tanahashi is going to give it his all on this one. At least I hope he does. You know, Moxley is going to be motivated. So I think it's going to be
Moxley's certainly not going to be on like some sort of project to embarrass Tanahashi. No, he's going to want to make Tanahashi look good.
Yeah. Boy, I think for a working relationship for these two companies, if this had been Okada and Moxley, I could have seen Okada taking this title.
And Okada would be fun on week to week television yes. for AEW. He wouldn't even have to say that much because Okada's just got that cool, like Dwayne The Rock Johnson sort of like cool yeah. vibe thing about him. Like you have him come out and just be cool and likable. Whereas Tanahashi's the cool dad, right? Like he's he's cool, but he wears mom jeans and like, you know, like, and you agree that like he's cool, but like he's a cool dad. Whereas Okada's like cool.
Yeah, Okada is modern cool. Tanahashi is, he was cool 8 years ago, but now he's still just doing the thing from 8 years ago type of thing.
So like, you know, Mark McGrath about a decade ago when he yeah. was like, yeah, I mean, we're even past that window now, but like mid-40s Mark McGrath trying to be 20s Mark McGrath.
He hasn't yet become self-parody. He hasn't yet become...
Right.
Let's go with Al Pacino in Heat.
Okay. You
know, where he actually, well, that's where he becomes self-parody. So maybe that's not a great example, but I don't know. One of these guys.
No, the Pacino line, though. I get it. I'm with you. There's a line where Pacino went from being like serious, like, dude, like Al Pacino versus like Al Pacino. Yeah. And like, there's a line where that happened. The Pacino line.
Yeah. So, that's Forbidden Door. There'll be other surprises announced on Rampage. You've already heard them by now. I'm laughing because in my inbox, it's the Ronda Rousey, quote unquote, baddest collection has arrived from WWE Shop. And I'm just thinking, is it her promos? but let's close up the lazy river there. This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at Crap Game 13. You can follow Chris at DWATG for now. I don't think, have you closed up the Twitter yet?
Not yet. I'll do an announcement. I want to make sure that like I get like contacts or whatever, but go to the patreon.com/DWATG. You can comment on the show. And like, if you are interested in the show, that's where to find it.
Yes. You can just follow Shake Them Ropes at Shake Them Ropes. All one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Broadcasting Network, podcasting network, whatever you want to call it. Chris does a show, as he said, called Don't Worry About the Government. I'm going to unplug it again right now.
Yeah, I like to think of it as a global podcasting network too. Like they always sell themselves.
There's a lot of Japanese wrestling on that.
Yeah, yeah, you could call it a podcasting network, or you could call it a global broadcasting network.
We dominate people. We're just kind of, we're kind of the fun loving guys of the group.
Yeah, we are. We are
for the guys like that, we go in the clubhouse and everybody goes, oh yeah, we know they're part of the team, but
Oh, Chris, huh? You can find the show at patreon.com/DWATG on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, searching for Don't Worry About the Government. Just taped one new episode that'll be out for the public. But it was actually two new episodes, one for Patreons as well. Both are available for patrons already up at patreon.com/DWATG. So if you're supporting the show, go and check those out. It's like an extra 2.5 hours of content.
See you next week, kids.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants. They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.